All right, so last week we discussed pyre foods and pots and bake and cooking as far as how the status of the pot affects your pyre food, when you are allowed to cook pyre foods and pots, and what food you can or cannot eat it with. So today we'll move to the oven. Very, very practical. This comes up all the time. Brownies are baked in an oven. What's the status of the brownie? What's the status? What can you eat it with? And things of the like. What's the status? So I brought again two questions which come up regularly, and we'll use that as the springboard for discussing the status of our ovens as they affect pyre foods baked in them. Case number one, I baked challah in my meat oven Friday afternoon after cooking for Shabbos. I just finished all of my foods. My meats have all been in the oven. I finished that, took them all out, and now I bake my challah. Can I use that challah now for my grilled cheese sandwiches Sunday morning, for the kids, for myself, or any other milk product? Again, the challah that we're talking about is not a challah that was put on the table. Once the challah goes on your meat table on Shabbos afternoon, we basically treat it as meat, and we assume that it gets all mixed up with stuff. But let's say even if you brought your challah out, since it's the first thing on the table, if you clear your challah away after you eat challah before you bring out your meat stuff, that leftover challah has that same status. What can you now do with your challah? Can you use it to make your grilled cheese sandwiches? That's case number one. Again, it was baked in your fleishik oven. Case number two, baked salmon in a liquid sauce on Sunday morning in my meat oven. So last time I cooked meat was Friday for Shabbos. My oven is still considered a meat oven. I would bake my salmon. This is now in a liquidy sauce, whatever you use to cook your salmon in, whether it's a wine or a water base, whatever it is. Now, but you realize if you wanted to serve that salmon at your milchiga brunch, which is going to have all sorts of quiches and milk products, but you realize that you baked your salmon in your meat oven uncovered in its liquid sauce. So what's the status of the salmon that has now been baked uncovered in a meat oven in order to be able to serve and eat with your milchiga foods? Those are the questions which come up often, so we'll use those as a springboard for covering the status of an oven, when we can and can't do that. And I guess, well, even answer these two questions, or can you do that on purpose? Forget about the question of when you get the question on Sunday afternoon from a frantic woman at 11:30, I have a brunch at 12, I bake my salmon, can I put it out with my quiche? What happens if a call comes in on Saturday night? Can I bake it? It's not that it's already happened, and what's the status? Am I allowed to use my oven to bake salmon knowing that I'm planning on serving it with my milk brunch on Sunday afternoon? Those would be the questions which we'll use as a springboard and go through. Okay, so what's the status of the oven? Let's go over some of the basic halachas and then get back to our pyre foods. So ovens are generally much more lenient than pots, as we will soon see. We are very frantic with our ovens, and people are very protective with their meat ovens and their milk ovens, and we have two ovens, and it's a great thing to have two ovens. But as we'll see, ovens are generally much more lenient. And what I want to go through is explaining why that is, so that we're comfortable with, as the halachas does, we'll go through how we apply them and use them. When food transfers, as we discussed last week, so the food basically transfers when you're using a pot. If you have a milchiga pot or a fleishiga pot, so the food which is cooked, the meat which is cooked directly in the pot, absorbs into the walls of the pot. Just like if I cook two foods together, the tastes combine within the confines of the pot. So just like taste leaves the food that it's from and absorbs into its surrounding areas, it actually absorbs into the walls of the pot. And now I have a pot with meat taste in it, so that if I subsequently cook milk, that taste comes out and it mixes and we have all sorts of problems. When you talk about an oven, it's a very different status, because the meat actually never touches the oven. That issue doesn't, I mean, maybe if you boil, maybe there's some types of things that you could use as if you're grilling, but we generally don't cook that way. It's in some form of a pot or a pan, so that the oven itself is going to be affected by a whole separate series of circumstances than what we generally have when we cook in a pot. When we cook in a pot, there's fire, there's heat, and there's meat directly coming into contact with the walls of the pot, which is where the transfer of taste occurs. So an oven doesn't have that issue. But an oven is going to have three other issues when we discuss cooking milk and meat in an oven together. And we'll go through those, and then we'll see where they do apply and where they do not apply. Now, the issue that we're going to be discussing is actually cooking milk and meat originally simultaneously at the same time in an oven. That's where the initial discussion takes place in halacha, can I cook in one oven at the same time milk and meat? And the original discussions came from times in our history where we didn't have individual ovens in our kitchen, we didn't have fancy Shabbos modes, we didn't have milchig and fleishig ovens. The community had an oven. There was a bakery, there was a store, wherever it was, the big oven. People would come and they'd drop in their pots and then they'd come later and they'd take them home. So that's where the original discussions take place, cooking milk and meat at the exact same time, baking them in the same oven. So there are three issues that's discussed in halacha. First is contact, which I'm not really going to discuss very much because it's not relevant almost at all to us today, that the milk and meat products shouldn't come into contact with each other while they are baking together. That's an obvious issue. There's heat involved. If the foods were to touch each other in those mass communal ovens, that would be a problem. You have the heat, you have the foods touching each other, that creates a problem. That's not the shilas that we have today. We rarely cook milk and meat simultaneously today, and if we do, they're in separate pots. That's not an issue, but at least just that's the issue that's discussed. Okay, the bigger issue is the next two, Recha and Zeya. Recha is known as aroma. Now, the Recha issue is a simultaneous cooking issue. Now, when foods are cooked simultaneously, they emit an aroma, a Recha, the Gemara discusses. And that when two foods are being cooked together, and again, we rarely cook milk and fleishig together, but this is where this discussion is taking place. If you literally did cook milk and meat foods together, so the Gemara discusses whether or not the aroma which comes from one would absorb into the other, imparting its taste through some concept the Gemara calls of aroma. And this is not steam. Steam is going to be the next thing. This is just when things cook together, just like you walk in the house and you can smell Shabbos. You can tell Shabbos is in the air. It's coming. You can't see steam. It's not a steam issue. It's just there's an aroma out there, and the Gemara discusses whether or not within that aroma, whatever is being transferred through the air brings along particles, food, taste of the other, and would therefore mix them into each other. Now the Gemara concludes that there's really nothing to this. The Gemara concludes that really at the end of the day, Recha lav milsahi. It's not really something of concern. It doesn't really bring with it something of substance that we need to be concerned with. So that even if one were to cook milchik and fleishik together in an oven simultaneously, those foods, and as far as the aroma issue goes, would not really be an issue. And certainly if you covered one of the pots, you can do that. So that we can cook in our oven today, milchik and fleishik, at the same time if one of the two was covered. We'll complete that with the next category, but that is worth noting as far as the problem of aroma, that when you simultaneously cook foods, that somehow the smell, the aroma which goes from one to the other, as long as one would be covered so that it doesn't emit a tight-fitting lid would allow that to happen. And again, this issue is not as practical because we don't really cook so often milk and meat together. But it is an issue that is out there. If you did cook it, that both foods are permitted. You can ask a shaila if you're really in a bind where you have to cook milk and meat together at the same time because an oven is broken and you have a lot of stuff going on. Call your local Orthodox rabbis. There are ways to actually do that. You can cook at the same time, believe it or not, milk and meat together, as long as one is covered, and we can work out some other details, which we'll have by the end of the day this morning as well. All right, we'll talk about the bigger issue that we need to really discuss today. The third issue is steam. This is really the issue because this is a real problem, and this is where all the halachas stem from in terms of working it out. So halacha says as follows: steam, which is emitted by a food, has the status of the food itself. So when you see the steam, you see the actual steam coming off of a food, that has the status of the food. So if you're cooking an open roast and you have gravy and sauce and liquid on the bottom of that roast which gives off the steam as it's cooking has a status of meat, and therefore anything in its way, another food item that's on top of the roast, or certainly the oven roof, will be affected by that steam. And just like whenever you cook meat in a pot, the taste will go from the meat into the pot, and now I have a meat pot that needs to be addressed. So too, if you cook a food which will emit a steam in an oven, so then as the steam comes off of the food and absorbs itself into either, again, a pot on top of that, or the oven roof will become, let's say, fleishig if we're cooking a meat roast, because that steam will absorb in. This is the issue when you go back to cooking them simultaneously. Even if you're going to cook milk and meat simultaneously, they can't be on top of one another. Because if they are on top of one another, and you have the meat on bottom and say your milk one on top, so the meat steam coming off the bottom one will ruin your top of the third side by side, then that would at least address that issue. But going back to the main issue of steam, so that's the issue that we have, that the steam will impart its taste into the top of the oven roof. So now I have an oven roof, which is fleishig. So you'll say, I mean, they want to just stress where the issues are. So, okay, so who cares? So I have an oven roof which is fleishig. Next day I want to cook, or even the next hour, I want to cook a milk dish. So let my oven roof become treif. Let's say the milk steam then goes up. And I'm so, how does that affect the food that I'm cooking? I cooked a pot of meat roast and an emitted steam, and so now the oven roof absorbed the meat taste. And now I cook a milk pot, and that emits steam, and so the milk steam rises up to the top of the roof, and it absorbs into there. So the top of my roof is now a treif. It has milk and meat. But what does that affect the food that's being cooked underneath? So the problem here is that the concern is whenever there's steam, there's often condensation. And when there's condensation, so then that might condense on the top of the oven roof and then fall back into your pot. Now, this isn't the most common thing. It's fairly minimal that will happen. A microwave is a totally different story because in microwaves this happens all the time. Microwaves are full of steam and condensation. But in an oven, it's much rarer. And even though it's a rare circumstance, the postgame are still concerned for it. Our ovens are ventilated. They're very different the way that they're made now than they once were. But nonetheless, that is where the issue is. The issue is that first I'll cook a milk or a meat pot, a meat roast with a liquid base. The liquid base will emit a steam. The steam rises up to the top and absorbs into the roof of my oven. If I subsequently cook a liquidy milk dish, which will also emit steam, so then that milk dish has that same steam going up to the top of the roof. It absorbs into the top of the roof. It becomes treif up there because now it's got meat taste absorbed in there. It's got milk taste absorbed in there. Some of that steam will condense, possibly fall back into my pot. And now I have a problem of treif condensation falling back into my pot. If such a thing were to really happen, you have lots of halachic mechanisms to get around. It's a minimal possibility. It's probably batel. Even if it falls in, your pot is probably 60 times the amount of little droplets that may have fallen into the right area under your pot. But this is the concern we have of going ahead and telling you you can cook milk is that concern. If it happens, again, call your local Orthodox rabbis. There are ways to address it if they were cooked. But l'chatchila, what are you allowed or not allowed to do? The reason why you cannot cook milk in your meat oven is because of that fear. Now, what that results in is, since the only concern I have cooking a milk dish in my oven that's officially fleishig is that the steam might emit, condense on the top, and fall back in, if I were to cover my milk dish, then I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem because there's no steam which is going to escape and get out to condense at the top of my oven. And even if it does, there's no way that it's going to fall back in and affect any of my pots. So that technically speaking, not even technically speaking, halacha l'maisa, one is permitted. You have a meat oven and you cook a milk dish, as long as the milk dish is covered so that we've prevented any of the steam from being able to get out and affect the status of the top of the oven and falling back in, that's totally okay to cook in your oven a milk dish as long as that second milk dish is covered. And we'll speak more about this in a minute. But what I just want to stress is the odd how that sounds, because when you have pots, the problem is in the walls of the pot themselves. So that's why we have many more stringencies when it comes to cooking with pots on a stovetop, that you can't cook milk dishes in your meat pots or even the pot dishes that we affected, how they're affected, because the taste goes directly from the meat, the walls of your pot, into the food that you're cooking. When you're dealing with an oven, your food is in its own pot. The only concern is the steam that's been there previously, that's absorbed into the top of the oven roof. As long as you cook in a way that prevents that from condensing and falling back in, then there isn't a problem using your officially designated meat oven, say, to cook a milk dish, as long as the milk dish is covered. So far, so good? Yeah. Meaning, okay. Let's say you are worried about the size. What would that cause a problem? Let's say I cooked my roast yesterday. Now, after I cooked my roast, I want to cook now a milchik dish.
Then you're cooking a dairy dish.
Simultaneously.
Yes.
Oh, and I just want to say that the force, even though the steam rises up, it eventually goes everywhere. Okay, you want to talk about, so therefore cooking simultaneously might be more of an issue. You want to say that it would get into the wall. I don't think it would get into the walls and through the walls into your food. Okay, I don't think that the concern about the steam with the power, the force of the steam is rising up. And after it hits the wall, maybe it dissipates. But that wouldn't, even simultaneously, as long as one would be covered, that would be okay. The main discussion is even, we're going to talk subsequent, where I've already cooked meat and now I want to cook milk. So I can cook milk, even a liquidy milk type of food, which is going to emit steam. If it's covered in my meat oven, certainly there was not even simultaneous, certainly afterwards, without any concern, because once the meat's melted, all that steam is gone from the meat. Now I'm cooking my second food, so there's no contact, there's no aroma, because they're not being cooked simultaneously, and the steam issue, as long as my milk is now covered, is not going to emit any steam out of the dish, and therefore I'd be allowed to do that.
Does one have to worry about the container itself, the pot, you know, if there was some places they had them or something
to
get on the outside of the milk.
Yes, okay, good. Now the major catch to all this is that your oven is clean. And that is going to be a worth discussing. Glad you brought that up. Now, that you have to assume that your oven is clean and not going to be at the same level. Otherwise, you just create a situation of cooking them simultaneously. Because I have still meat schmutz on the sides of my wall. If that's the kind of stuff which is still going to be emitting steam, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. The assumption is that the oven is basically clean. That is correct. But you do need to assume that the oven is clean, and then when you're cooking them simultaneously, you would not have that problem. Okay, those are the basic three issues. Whenever you have an issue of can I not, what's the status of my food, did the foods come into contact with each other, that's almost always going to be no. Are they being cooked simultaneously? If they are, one of them would have to be cooked. But if we're cooking them subsequently, I've already cooked one and now I want to cook the other, so the only issue we need to be concerned about is there going to be steam? And that is determined in the type of food. Solid foods generally do not emit a significant enough amount of steam to be that the halacha is concerned with. It's generally only liquid foods or some form of a liquid that will emit that kind of steam that will create the form of a problem. Yeah.
You can have a solid food like chicken and put no sauce in it, but it's going to create a liquid and just that.
Exactly, and that's where the issue. That's where the halacha is going. We're going to have to figure out dealing with the details of when it does and when it doesn't. So in other words, if you look in the halacha, we're actually this type of chicken, yes, that kind of chicken, no. It's going to be when there's steam. So then, a challah, for example, is a classic example which does not produce a lot of steam. So there are certain foods which do or don't, and cheese will melt, foods melt and do create steam. It's just a matter of is there or isn't there. And as we'll see in terms of the general practice, that's where we're going to have to figure, that's where it gets a very blurred line in trying to figure out. I can tell you what the principles are, and then in practice makes it a little bit more confusing. That's correct. If it does, even though a chicken might have started solid, if it will emit juices, if the juices cook and they create a steam, that's the same problem. That's correct. Okay, let's go through the general oven procedures with milk and meat, and then we'll see how that will affect our cooking of the parsnips. Again, so the only issue you look to see is it simultaneous. Is there a Zeya problem? If there's a steam problem, which is addressed by covering it, then we don't have a problem. So, first thing that we do is you generally establish, if you have one oven, you establish a standard use. So, for example, let's just choose meat. I'm not sure if most people would or would not go that way. I think most people do, but it doesn't matter if you do or don't. It's fine either way. My oven is a meat oven. So if that's what you generally cook more of and you establish your oven as meat, so then you can do whatever you want with meat without any concern. You want to cook it covered, you want to cook it uncovered, dry foods, solid foods, liquid foods, that should be dry or liquid as opposed to dry or solid. Either way, it's fine. It's my meat stuff. I can cook it without anything. And as I mentioned, if I want to cook a liquid, meaning it's really a steam emitting, that parenthesis, a steam emitting is for Karen's issue. It doesn't matter if it's liquid or not. It matters whether or not it really emits steam. So then they must be covered. But that's fine. In my meat designated oven, I am allowed to cook a milchig item as long as that item is covered. It was within 24 hours, it could be right after I cooked it, it's totally fine because of the fact that there's no way to affect my milk item. It's not touching anything meat, it's not cooked simultaneously, so there's no aroma, and there's no steam issue because my milk item is covered, so it's not emitting any steam, and therefore I don't have any problems. Now, this brings us to the crux of our issues. There are two situations which are now technically okay, and yet not recommended. Now, I say it that way, yeah.
When you say covered, does it have to be double wrapped?
No.
Just covered?
Yeah, it just has to prevent the steam from coming out.
Okay.
The double wrapped is, you know, kashrus, but this is it's really just to keep the steam in.
Okay.
All right.
But I'm a little confused why there isn't an issue of the meat being condensed on top, falling down on the meat, and melt on top.
If it's covered or uncovered?
Covered. But in a covered pot, isn't there an issue with the meat?
It would, but if, in other words, since you have it covered, so there's such a small amount of steam coming out, what's escaping? We're not concerned with that.
I think what you're saying is you're covered and then you have your lid on, and then the lid,
yeah.
The steam that was meat is
right.
Dropping on the milk lid. What does it do to that lid?
That would be a problem, but wouldn't you need the steam to come from your pot to condense on the top and then and fall back down? This isn't condensed on its own at the top of your oven?
You made a meat dish the other day, and it dripped on the top, and some of it sprinkled onto the bottom, and as you heat it up, the stuff that was on the bottom of the oven got reheated.
So that would have to be clean. I agree. In other words, you do it, but even so, it needs to be clean. Your oven does need to be clean. In other words, in my mind, I'm covering it with tinfoil. You're saying, but if I cover it with an actual cover, that's like a real pot. Because like we still do that sometimes. So you have a real pot,
yeah.
Then if you would have that situation, that would right. No, that's what would have to be clean. I agree, that would be a problem, yes.
Which can't you wash
that with? The tray flin? You don't have a tray sink? There's a milk exploration paste up in tray. That's what you
wash it by hand.
Well, yeah, wash it by hand if it's cold it should be fine in the bathroom sink, it's fine. Yeah, so your oven should be clean. If you're going to have that type of splattering on the bottom that will emit a steam, then yes, 100%, it should be clean. Whether or not it actually becomes treif will be a separate issue because, again, this is all a concern. Let's say you did that. Let's say you put in your milchig pot with a real lid, and then you realize afterwards that it really wasn't so clean because what you had cooked on Friday had spilled over and it's still there. But that still means that we have to be concerned that the stuff on the bottom was enough stuff to produce steam, went to the top, condensed, and fell back down on your lid. And when you looked, you didn't see anything because it already had evaporated. So it's, and that it wouldn't have become buffed when it fell in because my lid. So it's not the great of the largest of concerns the way that our ovens are made and that they're ventilated. It doesn't, but you should, if l'chatchila, yes, you should not cook a milchig thing in there if you have stuff splattered still on the bottom. It should be cleaned.
If you take the lid and take it to the bathroom and wash it off the milk.
You have to totally leave the kasher. I don't know. You have to add, that depends on the situation. You may have to, but I wouldn't even be a positive this time that we would be so concerned if you would say yes. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Does it matter what type of oven it is, convection versus conventional?
You're
going to the way the air flows is different than
the more it's ventilated, makes it less concern. In other words, even our ovens, our standard regular, you know, just what you get, and if you go into an apartment, this is what you find in the oven, is ventilated usually enough that it's a small concern that something would happen. But some are better than others, you say, right?
It's
even less. And so it wouldn't condense on the top. Right. To make it even less of a concern. I haven't heard yet that we would therefore say it's good enough not to be concerned at all to cook openly without worrying about anything, but it would be, if it did happen, it certainly would seem like even less of a concern.
One of the other concerns, you don't have to uncook the meat. You need to bake a meat dish and a dairy dish. You cover the dairy dish. Is it okay? It's all the concerns.
Dirty with meat?
Dirty with meat stuff?
Yeah.
You want to cook a dairy dish? Cover with tinfoil. If you cover with tinfoil, then, yeah.
No,
think so. Yeah, but you shouldn't do that.
I know you shouldn't.
It's dirty in the way that it's going to emit steam. Yeah, I don't know that you... I mean, they should...
Isn't there a problem with having a dirty oven, but it's nullified because it's like so
fine? Yeah, I was going to say, you can't clean it just enough just to scrub it down where it's not... No, if it's not going to emit steam, it's got to be liquid to get steam off of it, really. It's not burnt stuff, so just... You scrub it a little bit with a cleaner, it really... I would imagine... Okay, anyways, let's move on. What I want to discuss now are two technically, as I said, two technically okay situations. Now, I put technically okay in quotes because I want to distinguish in our levels of halacha. You have things which are like biblically prohibited and rabbinically prohibited and customly prohibited, and then they're just, we don't recommend it. But it's not because anyone said this is usur, this is prohibited. It's just fraught with issues. But I want to distinguish that very clearly. For example, last week we discussed the pot. So if I cooked meat in a pot, so what happens after 24 hours go by? So the meat taste is stale. It's a non-issue. So technically, according to the Torah, can I now cook milk in that pot?
Yes.
Can I?
No.
On what level is that answer of no? That's rabbinic. The Chachamim, Chazal, in the times of the Gemara already made a gezeirah, they made a decree. They said, this is rabbinically prohibited. You're not allowed to do that. That's rabbinic. But it's not just that we just don't do it. There's an actual rabbinic law that we don't use things that are more than 24 hours old because of the fact that they're going to become confused with that. What we're going to discuss now are technically fine, and the rabbis never instituted anything. It is actually absolutely okay. If you call up your local Orthodox rabbi, he'll say, I don't suggest it because of the reasons we'll discuss. But what we're about to talk about is actually okay. Mutter, there never was any decree, no rabbinic decree, or any other custom. It's technically fine. So what are those two things? Now, number one, would mean baking a solid milk dish in a meat oven uncovered. In English, a non-steam emitting food. Now, I asked my wife for some examples of that, some milk dishes that don't emit steam. We weren't able to really come up with anything, because most milk dishes have either milk, which is liquid, or a cheese, which melts and eventually comes up with some form of a steam. But if you were to have some form of a, if you come up with a suggestion of them.
Like what if you had, like you were making a cake that has milk
chocolate. Fine, something like that. You know, where they're chocolate chips that are dairy chocolate chips, but they're inside the cake, so they don't really emit. So if you have a solid dairy product in your meat oven, so if you go through the equations, everything is fine. I don't have any steam coming off of it. So it's not coming into contact with anything meat. It's not cooking simultaneously, so there's no aroma that I'm afraid are going to get mixed up together. And there's no steam issue, because if it's a cake that's solid enough, I don't know if batter, when it bakes, does or does not emit a steam, but let's assume for argument's sake it does not. So even though I have a milk dish, because it does not emit steam, it is absolutely okay to bake it in my fleishig oven immediately after baking my roast. So I have my roast in my oven with all of its gravy and all of its stuff, as long as it's not spilling. So when I take out my roast, I'm allowed to afterwards put in my solid, non-steam emitting milk food into that same oven, and it doesn't have any problem. That's the technical. It's okay. There's no reason against it. There's no decree. There's no gzera. There's no rabbinic law. It works. You are allowed to do so. Now, why is that not recommended? Because it's very difficult to determine when foods do and do not emit steam. What's the threshold of what's considered problematic or not problematic? Does a cake batter, when you bake a cake batter, is there steam that... I'm not really sure for myself. Maybe it does or doesn't. But all foods are not so simple to determine that. Again, especially when we're talking about a milkable food, which either has a milk or cheese product in it, which is making a dairy, which often will melt in the oven and emit some type of steam. It's hard to really know for sure. But if you're pretty sure you have a good solid food in front of you, there is no problem cooking in your meat oven immediately after cooking meat, cooking such a thing in your oven uncovered. Yeah?
What's the minimum amount of time if you want to just leave your oven on so that you want to make your oven hard?
About 20 minutes. We're going to get to that. About 20 minutes is fine. We're going to get to that in soon. Within 20 minutes for sure. Okay, that's area number one. So when you're cooking a solid food in a meat oven, that is okay to do. Technically okay. No one will tell you not to. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. No one can tell you that it's not allowed. Someone might tell you not to because of the discrepancy in figuring out exactly what is considered steam emitting, what's not considered steam emitting. So it's not recommended. It wouldn't be, if you'd ask me, should I? I'd say, can you wait a little bit longer? Could you cover it? Can you kasher it? If you can do any of those things, it'd be better. But if you don't have the time to kasher, you can't kasher, whatever, it is absolutely fine to cook a non-steam emitting milchic food. I guess maybe the other way is even easier to talk about, a non-steam emitting fleshic food. You could probably come up with, but either way. Would be fine. That's case number one, that's technically okay. Case number two is waiting 24 hours. Now, this is a very, to me, a fascinating halacha. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky held, and this is how we hold halacha l'maisa today as well, that an oven does not have the status of a kli. Kli, a vessel or utensil. What's the significance of the fact that an oven doesn't have the status of a kli? It's not like a utensil. So therefore, all the rabbinic prohibitions on kalim, on our utensils, don't apply to an oven. What are the two classic things that we have? So one is not cooking, as I mentioned earlier, as we discussed last week at length, not cooking with old, stale taste. Going back to last week's discussion, I have a pot. I cooked meat in a pot. The meat taste absorbs into the walls of my pot. But now 24 hours go by. As we discussed a few minutes ago, what's the status of my pot? So technically from the Torah, it's fine, because the taste in the walls of the pot becomes stale. It's a non-issue. We don't have to deal with it. The Rabbanan came and said, yeah, but you're going to get all confused within 24 hours, outside of 24 hours, this, that, forget it. Once it's meat, it's meat. Once it's milk. And don't ever use it for the opposite gender. That gezeirah, that rabbinic decree, doesn't apply to an oven, because that was only said on kalim. It has to be a utensil, a vessel. That which is halachically classified as such a kli, a vessel, has that prohibition. An oven, which is considered either part of the ground because it's attached or whatever its status an oven has, which is not that of a utensil, does not have that decree. So that when 24 hours go by from the last time that you cooked, and we say that, let's say steam did emit from the food that you cooked, it absorbed into the roof or the walls of the oven, but now 24 hours have gone by, what's the status of that taste that's inside the walls, the metal walls of your oven? It's gone stale, just like any other taste that's been removed from food and absorbs into some other material goes stale. Now that it's stale, we really deal with it as on the Torah level. It's stale and cannot have any impact on any other food. So once 24 hours goes by in my oven, my food, the taste that's absorbed into it is gone, and my oven has become parv again, because 24 hours have gone by. And therefore, the status that we have on pots, in which we say that doesn't make a difference, once a pot's a milchik pot, it's going to be milchik for the next 20 years, and once a pot's a fleshik pot, it's fleshik for the next 20 years, doesn't apply to an oven. Once the 24 hours goes by, it reverts back to its parv status, and it doesn't have any meat or milk status. That's number one of this, the kula of the leniency of an oven. And number two is we generally have a prohibition on kashering milk pots to use for meat. Meaning, let's say a person comes and says, I have this pot, I've used it for milk, for a meat roast all the time, I want to now kasher it to use for milk. So are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to kasher a meat pot specifically for the purpose of making it milchik? So halacha is that no, we don't allow that. So a much later decree, way after the times of the Gemara, but it has taken hold amongst the Jewish people that we do not allow a person to kasher a milk pot to use for meat or a meat pot to use for milk. Just it's, you know, technically it would work. You can kasher anything. We don't do that. So once it's meat, it's meat. Once it's milk, it's milk. If there's one exception, what time of year can we do that?
Pesach.
Once we're kashering for Pesach, that's the loophole when we instituted this decree that says to keep things separate, because again, the reason is the same reason as everything else. If you can take your pot and constantly go back and forth, you'll kasher it this week, you'll make it milchik, and the next week you'll kasher it again and make it fleshik, and the next week it's milchik again, so the next time you want to use it, and you have to remember, what is this again? For those of us who can't remember our children's names, there's no way we're going to remember what the status of this pot is. It's just, there's no way. So they said, forget it. Once it's meat, it's meat. It's milk, it's milk. Except for Erev Pesach, when you kasher something Erev Pesach, then it's a clean slate. Then you can do with it whatever you want. Both of those halachas, A, that we don't use a pot even after the taste has gone stale, and that we don't kasher it specifically for the other, don't apply to an oven. We do kasher an oven regularly to switch. Even though we don't do the bipods, have you ever thought of that? How come, right, if you ask your rabbi if you can switch your pot from one to the other, he'll say no, but your oven, we do that all the time, the kasher, and you switch it back and forth. For the same reason, it doesn't have the status of a pot. It doesn't have a kli stamp on it, and therefore, just like the decree of not using it after the taste goes stale doesn't apply to it, once 24 hours have gone by, your oven has automatically become pyre for the same thing. You can kasher it if you wanted to, back and forth, whenever you want it. Now, the ramifications of this are as follows. Therefore, you have in, what is that, 2b, it is technically permitted to cook a liquid milk dish uncovered after 24 hours. So you cooked your roast on Friday for Shabbos, uncovered with all of its liquid. It splatters everywhere. It's got steam. It's a meat oven. If it's cleaned and you sit 24 hours, which Shabbos, being that Shabbos takes 25 hours every most of Shabbos, your pot, your oven, if it's clean, is now parf. So that it is absolutely okay to cook on most of Shabbos a liquidy milk dish uncovered in your oven for your Sunday brunch, because since 24 hours have gone by, it's a parv oven. The status that we say, but wait a minute, but I cooked uncovered meat on Friday for Shabbos, and the steam went up, and it absorbed into the wall that's still there. So that only applies by pots. By pots, we're concerned with the taste, even after 24 hours, a rabbinic decree, we still deal with it. But we don't deal with that by ovens. Once the 24 hours have gone by, your oven is parv, and you can do with it whatever you want. Yeah.
If you cook meat in your oven Friday night for Shabbos dinner, let's say some spilled over, so you know, you're not really going to clean your oven Friday night, you know, whatever. So if you have waited the 24 hours, so let's say there was a spill, and you clean the spill, do you have to wait another 24 hours?
No.
Or is it,
no,
as long as it's clean at the time you're
cooking? Make sure it's clean when you cook it.
Okay, so you can... Yeah. Wait the 24 hours and then clean the
right, because the problem that we're waiting 24 hours is the steam that was emitted from the time of the cooking that absorbed into the walls. The stuff that's on the bottom there, you have to clean, but that's not going to be a problem. Now, that's technically permitted. Why is this not recommended, the waiting of the 24 hours? So there are basically two reasons. Number one is because it has to be clean. If all you're doing is counting 24 hours, you're going to forget. You have to make sure that the oven is clean, because that's going to be a whole separate problem. The other thing is you have to accurately remember when and what was the last item you cooked. So, which is the same problem of remembering our names. It gets confusing. So it's fine. If you do remember, it's absolutely okay. But you have to remember that, because so Friday it was Fleishik, I cooked my meat. Now 24 hours go by, so Motzei Shabbos I cook my milk. And then you have to keep track of it. So it's not recommended just to wait 20, but it is fine. If you do remember the last time that you cooked, and you remember I didn't throw anything in between, and I didn't cook this, and I didn't cook that, once 24 hours have gone by, your oven is parv, and you would be allowed to do whatever you wanted uncovered in that oven, and it would be totally fine. Yes. Yes.
Or, if you're clearing, can you cover the meat dish?
Yeah.
In the oven?
Sure.
With a dairy dish cover?
No. You want to cook a meat dish with a dairy cover? Is that what you said?
You just said that you can put a dairy dish in the oven, cover it up, and put also a meat dish in the oven, uncovered in a regular meat.
No. 24 hours later.
You have to clean up. You can put a roast in there and a dairy dish covered.
No. No. What's that? Oh, you're going back to the very beginning? Wait.
That's what we're trying to say.
You have the roasted cook, and you have the blitz
and cheese blitz.
Okay, yeah. You cover the cheese blitz.
Yes.
And you want the roast cooked at the same time with the cheese blitz. And you have to have a covered dish, dairy, open.
Technically speaking, yes. In other words, if there, yes. But it's not recommended. That's technically okay. Yes, no. To cook simultaneously? No, it's generally avoided to cook simultaneously. What we've been discussing for the last 20 minutes is consecutively, one after another, and having 24 hours go by. That's going back to cooking them at the same time. Anyway, so that's going back. Technically, that would be fine.
Technically, it's okay, but it's not only general practice.
Right.
It's not
correct, and they would have to be side by side also, correct. Right. Now, if it's really necessary, that we could talk about. But yes, if it's necessary, then you could do them side by side. All right. So let's summarize back where we're holding as far as this is. So as far as cooking consecutively, not at the same time, cooking one after another. So once I've cooked a meat pot, and then so let's say it's an open gravy, and I made my milk, my oven, fleishig. So technically speaking, there are two ways in which it would be totally fine to cook a milk dish in that afterwards. One is if the milk dish does not emit steam. So after the meat's been cooked and cleared out, I can now cook a milk dish in there if it's a solid, non-steam emitting dish, because since there's no steam coming off of the milk, so I don't have any problem to be concerned with. The reason why that's not recommended is because it's hard to determine if it is steam emitting or non-steam emitting. The other thing that's technically okay is to wait 24 hours. Because once 24 hours have gone by, since I cooked Friday and my oven is now became fleishig, but 24 hours have passed, my oven is automatically reverted back to its parve status, and I would therefore be allowed to cook anything milk, whether or not it's liquidy or non-liquidy, in that oven, and that would also be technically totally fine. Also not recommended for all the reasons it's hard to remember what the status is and making sure that it's clean, but that also is okay. So in practice, what we basically would do would be cover your milk. In other words, if you have a fleishig oven, generally it's recommended to cover your milk product that you're cooking. Or kasher the oven. Now I want to make a correction here. It says there wait 24 hours and kasher the oven. You do not need to wait 24 hours to kasher an oven. That's only by pot. That is a mistake. Please take that out. In practice, or just kasher your oven. And what does it mean to kasher your oven? Is just turning your oven on the highest setting that it goes and waiting 20 minutes on that setting. Yes. As I assumed it was 24 hours and I checked, I just forgot to take that. That's not correct. That's it. Yes, uncovered. Yes. Yes, that is correct. That's the general practice.
Hmm?
Yes.
Does it
doesn't matter how much your roast
spilled and everything? If you've cleaned it since then?
No. You need to clean it to kasher. You do need to clean it to kasher. So in other words, if you're either seeing that nothing is spilled or you cleaned it, you could then just leave it on for another 20 minutes, turn it on to the highest that it goes, and that's kashered. And then you can do whatever you want with your milk. This is without a self-clean. This is just turning it on and leaving it on.
So you either wait 24 hours or you burn it for 20 minutes at the highest oven.
But you're going to have to wait 24 hours to clean it.
Yes. You do need it to be clean.
You're ready to clean your oven.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm going to have to say, assuming that the oven is clean, it's either wait 24 hours or burn it for 20 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Even so, yeah. And once it's burnt in and it's discolored, that's nullified already. But if it's still stuff that's there, when stuff really, like on Friday, right when it spills, yeah, there's stuff there. That stuff is going to burn up and cause that. Yeah, that's why you don't want to have to clean that. Yeah.
Because you want to clean it, you can stay from milk.
Yes. Yes, because you just kasher your oven, and you don't have to wait 24 hours to kasher like you do by a pot. Because the reason for that is just by the way, when you kasher a pot, the way we're kashering it is with what's known as hagala, dipping it in boiling water. That process of kashering, we're careful to wait 24 hours before doing so. You're kashering your oven with what's known as libun. You're actually using the heat to burn out the taste, not to purge it through the boiling water. The boiling water purges taste. It draws out the taste from the pot, puts it in the water, and then it becomes nullified in the water. There, we usually wait 24 hours before doing that. When you use libun, when you use heat itself, fire or the fire equivalent of an oven, you're actually destroying the taste where it is. So that you don't have to wait 24 hours. It hasn't been purged out. It's been destroyed in its place. And therefore, you don't have to wait the 24 hours to do that. So this is all with milk and meat. So how does this refer to parf? So all of those technically okay situations, which are not necessarily recommended, are absolutely okay to do on purpose when it comes to par foods. So for examples, number one, it's permitted to bake a solid par food in a meat oven within your 24 hours and eat it with milk. So if you have a par of solid, again, so I just took my roast out of my oven, it's Friday afternoon. 2 minutes later, I now want to bake something parf, which is solid, that doesn't emit a lot of steam. That would have challah. Classic example, challah. I have it right there, challah. I bake my challah. What's the status of my challah? Your challah is still parf. For the same reason that you could have baked something milchig that's solid in your oven right after your meats, technically. We don't recommend doing that. Maybe it does emit steam. We don't like doing that. But you technically can. If it's a non-steam emitting food baked right after your meat, since it doesn't emit any steam, that's fine. Certainly something parv we're totally okay with. So if you bake your challahs in a meat oven 2 minutes after baking your roast, your challahs will remain parv. And unless you ruin that by bringing them to your... Uncovered. Totally uncovered. Unless you ruin that by bringing it to your meat table while there's still meat on the table... That remains five, and you can do whatever you want with it on Sunday morning as far as grilled cheese sandwiches go.
And it's the other way too, if you put it on your dairy table?
Yeah. We would have that same thing. In other words, if the dairy is the one that's uncovered.
Well, they're both open.
So are they both, do they emit steam or they both don't? Yes, that would also be fine. And with steam, the type of food is where they... Cakes, when you bake cakes, they emit steam or doesn't emit steam? So as I'm asking, so when you bake a cake...
That's what I was trying to find out. Like, how do you know what's a steam-emitting food or not? I mean, like, a cake, is it steam-emitting or isn't? I mean,
yes, no, it's negligible. It's very little. I would think so. So then that would be fine. Yeah. Well, there you have the other problem. It's technically fine. That would not. There you have the category number two. You have what's known as the reicha, the aroma. So
the aroma you're going to get from eating cake, just the metal.
Right. So when they're cooking. So when they're cooking simultaneously, and one's dairy, one's parv. So you should, there, that would have that other issue. So if it was done, it would still be parv, and you could still eat it as parv, but it wouldn't be recommended to you. You shouldn't do that l'chatzila. If you want to keep the parv cake parv, to eat with pleasure.
You mentioned the parv cake, you make a parv
cake. So same thing, so a parv cake in a fleshic oven, within 24 hours, would remain parv.
When you say that brings your challahs to the table, so on Friday night you bring two challahs to the table, you make samosi, but only one is cut.
Right.
And so as long as after the one is cut, and everybody eats challah, if you take the uncut one off the table, that's still considered to be
sure.
Parv.
That's
even
only
if it gets cut.
Yeah, not even if it's getting cut. Even the one that's cut is also fine. There's no meat on the table yet. There's nothing magical about your Shabbos table that makes it fleshic.
Okay, gotcha.
It's that,
there's no meat on the table. So even if you keep the
challah... There's something magical about your Shabbos table. It's just not that makes it...
I understand what you're saying. So in other words, like, as long as you take the challah off, cut or uncut, before you serve the
Yeah,
meat.
That's fine.
It's
that once there's meat on the table, so then people are taking this dish and that spoon, and it's a mess. I mean, most houses, of course, are not like that, but we assume that that probably will happen.
So the uncut challah that was there is considered flation.
No, it's if you leave it on the table the whole meal. Yeah, then I would treat it as flation, even though it's probably so clean. But if you took it away before you served your first course, then for sure it's fine.
What if you serve buffet from another room and you never bring that, and everybody brings their plates already served and sits down at the table, but not like in the past, the meat across the table.
Yeah, it's probably technically fine. I don't know, it's one that's like in the recommended issue. No, once it's been on the table and anyone can reach in and take a piece, and our hands aren't really very dirty when we eat, and there's probably a very small possibility that someone got cholin on their hand and they took a piece of challah, and it's unlikely. We generally just want it there. Right, then it is. So we just generally assume once it's been on the table with meat, we just treat it as meat.
What about the tray that we put the challah onto? If kids bring home the tray that they make in school,
yeah.
Do we consider that tray?
flesh if it's been on the flesher table with that towel?
I don't know. If you clean it, if you looked at it before the, you know, the meal started and you washed it from the previous week, I think it should be fine. So you tell me, and it's, so you look at it, if, you know, if it's, you know. Yeah.
Two questions about par. Okay. If you bake a fish in a meat pan, you can't, obviously, I don't think, serve it with a milk meal, even though the fish is par. It's been cooked in a meat pan. Yeah.
That was last week's discussion.
Yeah, I know, but
you still have the question.
In
the oven
versus on the stove. What? One second. Well, you're asking about...
It's cooked in a meat pan.
How long ago, when was the last time you used the meat pan? Within 24 hours or after 24 hours?
I'm not talking about the fish, though. It's been within 24 hours.
Okay, so right. So then within 24 hours... Right, so your fish is cooked in a within 24-hour thing.
Is.
So then we would not serve that with. That's called dairy or meat equipment in this case.
Yeah.
Meat equipment cannot be eaten unless you're a Sephardi with dairy. In your case.
Right. And if the pan had not been used within 24 hours, you cook the fish in it.
And you could.
And you could.
Correct.
And if you had fish that you cooked and you served it on a meat plate with your meal. Somebody didn't eat it, and you have it left over. You take it off the meat plate, put it into a par Tupperware.
That's fine.
Then you can eat it with a
yes.
dairy meal.
It, right, yes.
Later.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. So you don't really need to have a separate par frying pan and a par baking dish, do you?
You don't have to have anything, no.
But it helps.
Yeah, it helps. That, your question that you asked... Your question that you asked, you could have eaten that fish with milk. Yes, because in other words, you cooked a par food after 24 hours. So therefore, it has both of the leniencies we discussed last week. It's the two transfers into the fish by the time it got there, and the pot's more than 24 hours old. You could have eaten that with milk, certainly if you put it on a plate that doesn't have any more of an impact. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Lining something? I assume it should help. In terms of keeping the taste out of the pot getting into your food. Yeah. You have to be careful because those things aren't always the most foolproof things, but technically, yeah, that'd be fine. Just as far as maintaining a par status. Yeah, so let me just know the last thing, the last question would be then the issue of the fish. So if you cooked fish in a liquid base on Sunday morning, so what's the status of that in my oven? I cooked meat in my oven on Friday. Now Sunday morning I want to cook fish, my salmon, in a liquid base, which is for sure going to have a lot of steam. Can I do that to serve in my milk meal? The answer is yes, because it's been more than 24 hours. And it has to be clean. Yes, the oven has to be clean. If your oven is clean, you can then purposely cook fish in a liquid base. It's going to emit steam in your oven and plan on serving that at a milk gamil. Clean it. What's that?
Thank
you. Then you shouldn't do that. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you want to put the part of it to have like a cake or a challah. You want to take your challah after your roast platter. If you don't clean it, there's some. Is it not hard anymore?
So I think it should be a problem because if the stuff that's splattered would be the kind of stuff that would emit steam, then that would be considered cooking simultaneously your meat and your parve, and the meat's emitting steam and your parve is uncovered. I don't know that we'd be so concerned to change its status. I would tell you not to do that.
So, how can you have, I mean, like even just having the chicken, like you have your chicken there with butter and your oven is hot, you can't go and wipe down like all your things that flatter.
I don't know if we'd go so far as to say that that would already change the status. I would definitely say that you shouldn't do that once it's there. Would it actually change the status? I mean, I guess technically, I think it would, unless the fact that we're not concerned enough. Based on all the things, it would, because the steam, the stuff that splatters is going to emit steam, the steam of the air condenser will fall back in. I just don't know if since the whole thing is a concern, it's pretty minimal or nominal concern that it's actually going to go up, condense, and fall back into your thing anyway, since that's such a small concern. I don't know that we'd actually then say, if you did it, that it changed the status. Let me look into that.
Does keeping
the
oven on high get rid of the stuff that's built in that situation?
Like to kasher it?
But kashering, you have to clean it first. I'm saying if you're not.
Would it burn? Does it burn it out? If you leave it there for 20 minutes, does it burn it up?
Right.
I'm asking you. I don't know that. I asked you first. So you just want to leave it on for 20 minutes. If it burns it out, and this is like, take a look. If it will burn it out, then. Yeah, that would be fine. No, then it's burnt off. That's fine.
Not necessarily spilling, but splatter.
Stuff splatters. You just want to leave the oven on for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Okay. If that's what a self-cleaning oven basically accomplishes. So if it burns it up, so that it's really just, you know, the burnt stuff, it's not anything real there anymore, that's not going to emit a steam, that would be fine. You just got to look and see if that happens.
If you cook soup in a pot, and then you put the pot in the refrigerator, still with the soup.
Yeah.
Then after, say, Shabbos, you transfer to some other container. The 24-hour start when you stop cooking or when you take it out.
Okay, good. In that case, it actually starts when you take it out, because a liquid sitting in a pot is there are a couple of mechanisms in which food transfers. One of them is soaking, just soaking a liquid in a pot. So since it's been soaking there, sitting there for more than 24 hours, that also causes a transfer to happen. And therefore, you would have to start from after that. But if it just, yeah. The way taste transfers, either through heat, or through, and we'll talk next week about a knife cutting, or if it soaks. Something which soaks in a vessel for a significant amount of time also just causes a transfer of taste. So if you have a soup in a pot for 24 hours, it just sits in the fridge over through Shabbos, that also will cause a transfer. So if you want to start, when do I count my 24 hours that my pot has now not been considered no longer used? It would start from after you transfer the soup out of the pot, not from when you finish cooking.
I just want to kind of extend. So you can make grilled cheese with that challah because the first question.
Yes, because the challah is not a non-steam emitting food.
And liquids, we're going to bake liquid part of the onion, we keep the soup after 25 hours, you can have it with milk, during 25 hours, you can't. Depends whether the
oven needs to run
for the
flux. Right. Great. Okay, I hope that was less confusing than you started. I may have made it more confusing than when you started.